I'm Robin Amler of IBS Intelligence. You're listening to the IBS iViews podcast. With me is Robert Kraal, co-founder of Silverflow, a Netherlands-based global cloud platform for global card processing. And we'll come on to what Silverflow itself does in a moment. But I'd like to begin, Robert, because you have a track record, and I want to explore what your learnings have been from what you've done over the years. What advice would you be giving to people who are looking to start up a financial technology business now, apart from don't?
Well, I would not say don't do, obviously. What I think is very important is understand the product that you're actually going to build and understand if there's a need in the market for that particular product. I see a lot of companies, entrepreneurs starting products that are already there or who don't really differentiate compared to the products that are there today. I think that is the primary thing you should look for. The other one, of course, is who are my customers? Typically banks, they can be slow in making decisions. More startup companies, they can be quicker. So who is my audience? Who am I selling to? And third, of course, is the team. With who will I build this business? Who do I need? Which advice do I need? Which people do I need to actually build my business and sell my product to my customers?
So it's not a field of dreams. It's not a case of if you build it, they will come.
I don't think so. I think that typically companies who buy financial products, they prefer to work with products that have already proven their technology. So it's very difficult to get your first customer. But if you have a fantastic product, of course, you can build that. But it's not that the whole market is sort of easy accessible for new products, I would say. Depends a bit whether you focus on the retailers. They might be a little bit more accessible, or if your customers would be more startups yourself. In our case, our customers are quite often banks or established financial companies, and they just have longer lead terms with everything. They want to see more proof points that your product works. This quite often the legal process takes a little bit more time. Also, the implementation process takes a little bit more time. So those are things I would definitely consider, yeah.
We're in a fairly tight economic times around the world still. Obvious reasons for that. I don't need to rehearse those. But what does that mean in the ability to secure investment for your business as an entrepreneur? You're going to have to work that much harder.
Absolutely. And actually, last 2 years have been tough. The years before have been tough as well because of COVID, of course. So it was difficult to get investment because you couldn't reach the people. I think that also here, it's very important to realize that investors today, they do have the money. So that's not a problem. They do want to invest. So that's not a problem. But they're not investing as much in the number 3, 4, or 5 in that particular market segment. So if you want to get good investments, try to be the number one in your particular segment. Try to really bring something new to your segment. Be the first, be the only one, be further ahead of the curve, be quicker in growth, etc. And if you're able to sort of display a few of those features, and of course, you also have to sell your future dreams to those investors. Why do you remain the number one, or why will you become the number one? I think in those cases, there's still funding to be gotten. But if you're actually, indeed, if you're number 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of a product that already exists and you don't have a clear path to become the number one, it can be a bit challenging to get proper funding.
You talk there about the path to becoming number one. A certain amount of intellectual rigor has been injected into the process. There was great excitement over the last few years about fintech and financial technology in general, but you have to have a sensible business plan. You have to have a path to profitability. You can't just sit there and say, I have a great idea that's going to change the world.
Exactly. No, that's what investors will look for as well. So besides having the right product, trying to get the number one position, you should also be able to do that in a profitable way, or at least demonstrate that there's a path to profitability, that the gap between essentially your losses and your profits is shrinking over time. So you need to have a business that can scale very quickly, where at the same time, you don't need to scale your operations as quickly. In most cases, your people essentially is the highest part of your cost in a startup environment. So if you find a business model where you can get more products out in the market, more customers out in the market, where you don't need an equivalent amount of more people, then you, I think, have a good product to talk to your investors about.
Let's focus specifically now on your, and I'm going to say current business, because it's not the first business you've set up. You have a track record as a successful entrepreneur and a successful developer of fintech businesses. So talk to me a little bit about Silverflow and what Silverflow itself does.
Yeah, the formal term for Silverflow is we are an acquirer processing platform. Well, not everybody will understand what it is. Essentially, we provide the technology between our customers, and our customers quite often are banks or payment service providers. We provide the technology that connects them to the card networks, to Visa, to MasterCard. We're not an acquirer. So our customers can be acquirers. In many cases, they are acquirers. They're new acquirers or existing acquirers who simply want to have a better technology, better path into the card networks. And of course, it already exists. There are many companies who have done this for decades, but that's at the same time the problem. Most of the companies that do this today are actually, in fact, built in the 80s and maybe 90s. So they, what we call our legacy systems. And that's where we saw the opportunity. We saw there are space for innovation. And that's why we said, okay, we're going to tackle that particular area, the technology to connect banks to the card networks. And we're going to compete with the legacy systems who simply cannot cope up with today's demand for data, for instance, or speed of integration, or overall cost, or insight, or a lot of different factors. And that's what we do.
You mentioned one word there that got me excited, and the word was data. Everything I see in fintech nowadays is about the intelligent management of data. And banks have a lot of data, but they don't often know what they know.
Exactly.
So what are you doing to help with data transparency?
Well, first of all, we consider the data as not our data. It's the data of our customers. So we provide all the data that we get in a raw format if our customers want that, but in most cases they don't need that, but also in a pre-processed format so they can actually do something with it. And we build tools on top of the data that help our customers do their business better. So there are a few simple things. Look at, for instance, conversion optimization or fraud or risk reduction. Those are easy ones that you can do with data. But we also particularly use our data for our operational processes. And then you're looking at essentially automating a large part of your day-to-day operations, financial reconciliation, cost calculation, settlement forecast, but also on the dispute and chargeback side, which is in particular in cards can be quite a lot of work. And how does that translate for the businesses? Well, because of those solutions, they need fewer people to do the daily operations. So essentially, it gets less of a cost factor, but also with higher accuracy, because the data that we use and process make sure that we can very accurately forecast essentially everything around pricing and settlement forecasts and reconciliation, etc. So we use that data besides the standard things also for operational excellence for our customers.
Now, you recently secured a 15 million euro investment. Just harking back to what we were talking about earlier, what was the story you were able to tell that meant you were successful in raising that funding? And what are you going to do with it?
Very good question. Well, the company itself, we exist from a legal point of view. We're going into our fifth year, so 4.5 years at this moment. And the product that we've been building actually is a quiet product from a technical point of view. So from a commercial point of view, we've only been live for 1.5 years or so, 1.5 to 2 years, when we signed up our first customers and started doing our first transactions. So in particular, in the last funding round, of course, we were able to demonstrate that we have a certified product, but also product market fit, that we have customers on board. And that combined with a strong pipeline of potential customers that would be willing to sign. Our customers don't sign overnight. Typically, these can be processes that take a couple of months, if not longer, but we were able to show a certain pipeline. We were able to show a track record with our existing live customers. They're all happy and they're in the growth mode, and also a pipeline of newer customers. And this actually triggered GPT Ventures. This is Javier Perez's funding vehicle. He used to be president of MasterCard in Europe, so he fully understands what we're doing. He's very knowledgeable on this whole field. He also understands the market. And because of the track record that we showed in the past, the speed of development, but also, of course, the pipeline, the commercial pipeline looking forward, in combination with what we mentioned before, how can we grow our business and at the same time keep costs under control and work to a break-even model? And that was the trigger for him to lead this round. And of course, we're quite thrilled to have an investor who really knows in detail what we're building.
That's how you got the money. You demonstrated your clear path. But where are you heading to with it? What, as I finished off asking earlier, what are you going to do with the money? What's the next step for Silverflow?
Yeah. So of course, what we demonstrate is live products. What we want to do with this particular funding round is to show how big our total addressable market actually is. And that is composed of a geographic spread. So we want to show that we can bring customers up and running, that we can board customers essentially across the globe. They're today distributed between Europe, a number of countries in the Asia-Pacific region, and of course, North America. But what we hope to demonstrate is also moving into LATAM and maybe Middle East, Africa, or Central Asia. We also want to demonstrate the different type of customers that we can work with. And they range from acquirers that are migrating away from their old system to a newer system. We have a number of them, including, for instance, Deutsche Bank, but also new acquirers. Quite often, these are payment service providers or neobanks or billing providers, marketplace type of companies who are in the process of actually getting their acquirer license from Visa and MasterCard. So we help them get live as well. And we have a third group of customers who are not an acquirer themselves, who would like to stay with their existing acquirer, but just want to have better technology. And what we like to show is in all those markets, those three types of different customers, and then preferably multi-channel, so e-commerce and card present type of transaction. If we're able to demonstrate that, then the next phase after that will be particular showing growth in all those markets. Then instead of working with one, we can work with multiple acquirers in those regions.
Robert Kral, co-founder of Silverflow, thank you very much.